Hello and welcome to this week's Poem of the Week podcast in the Inner Sanctum. Thanks as always for joining me. I thought this week I'd do something somewhat different. We're still going to be reading poems. But I thought I'd have a, festival is the right word, probably at least two, possibly 3 weeks, looking at the poetry of someone who was certainly not a friend of the Catholic Church, and indeed was an enemy of the Catholic Church. But nonetheless, a very significant and important poet, and perhaps not a great poet, but certainly a fine one, and one worth knowing. So who am I talking about? I'm talking about Sir Thomas Wyatt, and he was a poet of the early 16th century, so during the reign of Henry VIII, a contemporary, therefore, of course, of the great saint and writer, St. Thomas More. But Sir Thomas Wyatt was a very different sort of person. So he was an ally, a loyal subject of King Henry VIII, worked as a politician, an ambassador, diplomat, doing the king's service. He was also a great friend, if that's the right word, certainly under the patronage of Thomas Cromwell, who, as those of you know the history of Tudor England, was really the architect, very ruthless, Machiavellian, cynical architect of the English so-called Reformation. So Thomas Wyatt is on the side not of the angels but of the devils, very interesting life. Thomas Cromwell, as is often the case of those who support tyrants, became the victim of the tyrant and was beheaded on the orders of King Henry VIII in 1540. Thomas Wyatt died 2 years later. He was implicated. He was a friend. He knew how well is open to conjecture, Anne Boleyn. And it certainly has been said and suggested that they were lovers at some time or another. He certainly knew Anne Boleyn before the king did. She was a couple of years older than him, much younger than the king, of course. So it's been suggested that they had a relationship, and certainly there were suggestions of this in some of his poems, which we'll look at. So that's why I'll probably discuss the poems a little bit more than perhaps I usually do, if I feel that some sort of contextual explanation is needed. And he was certainly implicated in the king's getting rid of Anne Boleyn. obviously, King Henry VIII had Anne Boleyn beheaded on charges of multiple cases of adultery, most if not all of which were probably fabricated. So Thomas Wyatt was imprisoned as one of these alleged adulterers, although unlike others who were beheaded for their alleged adultery to Anne Boleyn, or with Anne Boleyn, he was acquitted, probably because of the fact he had a close friendship with Thomas Cromwell, who of course was the King Henry VIII's henchman. It's not what you know, including who you know in the case of Anne Boleyn, but it's who you know in the case of powerful friends of the king. So very interesting life. And so without any further ado, I should say more about his importance as a poet. He has been called, very unfairly, I think, and untruly, the father of English poetry. That claim belongs probably to Geoffrey Chaucer, in terms of what we would now call modern English, Middle English, technically, post-conquest English, as opposed to Old English, which is pre-conquest. But the father of English poetry is either Geoffrey Chaucer or the Beowulf poet, perhaps, or the anonymous poet of the Dream of the Rood. We don't know who they are, and they were writing in Old English. Anyway, this is a... I'm going off on a tangent. So Thomas Wyatt, however, is credited with bringing the sonnet to England. So the Petrarchan sonnet he brought to England, and the 16th century became the century of the sonnet craze. And of course, Shakespeare himself was to write well over 100 sonnets. So he's important as a poet, as a pioneer of poetry in early modern English. So as a historical figure, as a figure in literary history, he's important. So he's worth knowing and noting. And that's what we'll do. So I'm going to read some of his poetry here. So let's begin with... And wilt thou leave me thus? So one thing I think I will say before I start reading is that he reminds me in some sense, writing in obviously an earlier form of English, reminds me somewhat of the poetry of Lord Byron, much of whose poetry was lamenting failed and broken relationships, often with a sense of bitterness towards his lover who had either spurned him or whom he'd spurned. So Thomas Wyatt is that. So we wouldn't be surprised, having known something about his biography, to find something of an element of disorder in his life and therefore in his poetry. So that's what we find. So, without further ado. And wilt thou leave me thus? And wilt thou leave me thus? Say nay for shame, to save thee from the blame of all my grief and grame. And wilt thou leave me thus? Say nay. Say nay. And wilt thou leave me thus, that have loved thee so long, in wealth and woe among, and is thy heart so strong, and as for to leave me thus? Say nay, say nay. And wilt thou leave me thus, that have given thee my heart, never for to depart, neither for pain nor smart? And wilt thou leave me thus? Say nay, say nay. And wilt thou leave me thus, and have no more pity of him that loveth thee? Alas, thy cruelty! And wilt thou leave me thus? Say nay, say nay. Okay. Broken relationship, broken heart, whatever, and we'll carry on. Madam, withouten many words. Madam, withouten many words, once I am sure ye will or no, and if ye will, then leave your boards, and use your wit, and show it so. And with a beck ye shall me call, and if of one that burneth alway ye have any pity at all, answer him fair with yea or nay. If it be yea, I shall be fain. If it be nay, friends as before, ye shall another man obtain, and I mine own, and yours. No more. That one perhaps an effort to court or seduce a lady. We do not know whether she said yea or nay, unless this poem, of course, was written before the one we've just read. That I do not know. And now we have in a turnum. In eternum. In eternum I was once determined for to have loved and my mind affirmed that with my heart it should be confirmed in eternum. Forthwith I found the thing that I might like and sought with love to warm her heart alike. For as me thought I should not see the like in eternum. To trace this dance I put myself in press. Vain hope did lead and bade I should not cease. To serve, to suffer, and still to hold my peace in eternum. With this first rule I furthered me apace, that as me thought my troth had taken place, with full assurance to stand in her grace in eternum. It was not long ere I by proof had found that feeble building is on feeble ground. For in her heart this word did never sound, in eternum. In eternum then from my heart I cast, that I had first determined for the best, now in the place another thought doth rest, in eternum. There we see the poet in pursuit of a fickle maid, putting his faith in the wrong things, in terms of eternity. And this one is a sonnet, an example here of a Petrarchan sonnet that he introduced to England. It also probably refers, in the last two lines particularly, to the fact that Anne Boleyn, with whom he certainly had a friendship and perhaps a very close, intimate friendship, is no longer safe to hunt because she now belongs to the king, or Caesar, as he is called in this poem. So here, of course, the hunter is the poet, Thomas Wyatt. The hunted, the hind in the sonnet, is probably Anne Boleyn, and Caesar is the king. So with that explanation, let's read on. Whoso list to hunt? Whoso list to hunt, I know where is an hind, but as for me, alas, I may no more. The vain travail hath wearied me so sore, I am of them that farthest cometh behind. Yet may I by no means my wearied mind draw from the deer, but as she fleeth afore, fainting I follow, I leave off, therefore, sithens in a net I seek to hold the wind, who list her hunt, I put him out of doubt, as I may spend his time in vain. And graven with diamonds in letters plain, there is written her fair neck round about. Noli me tangere, for Caesar's I am, and wild for to hold, though I seem tame. Okay, so again, not blasphemous, but perhaps a metaphysical conceit of a slightly edgy type. Noli me tangere, of course, is from the Gospel. Christ, the words of Christ, do not touch me. But here, of course, the woman who must not be touched is not Jesus Christ, but Anne Boleyn, a woman of certainly easy virtue, who belongs to Caesar. She might be wild to hold. She might seem tame. In other words, she might seem to be one who's easy to catch when hunted. But she's wild, should you catch her, in the sense that she belongs to another, and that other is King Henry VIII. We'll have one more, I think, in this. That will be five, and we'll come back and have some more next week. We'll have a little Sir Thomas Wyatt season. I'm not going to say festival, because that implies celebration of the man, although I think there's nothing wrong with celebrating the beauty of the poetry. But we'll have a Thomas Wyatt season. Probably 2, possibly 3 weeks. But to conclude, the first. Farewell, love. Farewell, love, and all thy lords forever. Thy baited hook shall tangle me no more. Senec and Plato call me from thy law to perfect wealth my wit for to endeavour. In blind error when I did persever, thy sharp repulse that pricketh I so sore, hath taught me to set in trifles no store, and scape forth since liberty is lever. Therefore farewell, go trouble younger hearts, and in me claim no more authority, with idle youth go use thy property, and thereon spend thy many brittle darts. For hitherto, though I have lost all my time, me lusteth no longer rotten boughs to climb. Okay, many, many poems, sonnets, the last couple were sonnets, unsatisfying, unfulfilling love, the love of the world, seasoned by the lust of the flesh, but told nonetheless in beautiful English poetry by Sir Thomas Wyatt. And we'll come back, please come back next week for the second in our series of poems by Sir Thomas Wyatt. Until then, thanks so much as always for joining me. And until then, goodbye and God bless.